Welcome to the BLG Podcast, where we discuss industry trends and legal issues that affect Canadian businesses. Borden Ladner Gervais is one of Canada's largest law firms, with more than 700 lawyers, intellectual property agents, and other professionals located in five cities across Canada.
In this edition, BLG lawyers Lori Goldbach and Clay Jacobson provide an overview of legal privilege and best practices for in-house counsel.
Thank you for joining us, and welcome to the BLG podcast. My name is Lori Goldbach. I am a partner in BLG's tax group in Calgary. I am a tax litigator, which means my practice focuses on tax disputes and litigation with taxing authorities. In my practice area, issues relating to when taxpayer communications are privileged or how to ensure privileged communications are properly created and protected from disclosure arise frequently. Today, we will provide an overview of the different types of privilege, suggest some best practices to protect privileged communications, and review strategies for creating and maintaining privilege during transactions and investigations. Joining me today to discuss this topic is Clay Jacobson. Clay is a partner in BLG's Disputes Group in Calgary. For those of you who missed it, Clay and I discussed this topic at BLG's presentation to the Association of Corporate Counsel in Edmonton on January 16th, and to the ACC branch in Calgary last fall. Clay, thank you for being here today. Clay, could you start us off with an overview of the different types of privilege that commonly arise in your interactions with in-house counsel?
Yes, thank you, Lori, for being here as well and for that introduction. In my litigation practice and in the course of dealing with my colleagues in-house, I've found that the issue of privilege is one that arises in all sorts of different contexts. It comes up often in questioning when questions are objected to on the basis that the information sought is privileged. And of course, that is a common subject of disagreement amongst opposing counsel because it is often not clear to all whether a document or conversation was privileged. The basic trappings of privilege, such as a lawyer being at a meeting, are usually obvious, but it may not be clear to all whether the strict requirements are met. Privilege also comes up in document production when parties are required to produce all their relevant and material records, and some are withheld on the basis of privilege. This too can be the source of much debate. It comes up for our in-house colleagues often before or outside of litigation, where they are asked to take steps to ensure that certain future communications are protected by privilege. That may arise, for example, when the company is evaluating its options with respect to a particular contract, which has the prospect of upsetting a counterparty and leading to litigation. It may arise in the context of a workplace accident where the company is attempting to ascertain what took place, but would like to keep its discussions confidential and free from compelled production from a regulator. In all these contexts, it's important to remind ourselves of some of the candidates or types of privilege that may apply to protect a document or conversation from being subject to compelled disclosure to an outside party or tribunal. There are numerous types of privilege, including spousal privilege, privy counsel privilege, and others, but certainly in my practice, the four types that arise in the vast majority of cases are solicitor-client privilege, litigation privilege, settlement privilege, and common interest privilege.
Thanks, Clay. Solicitor-client privilege is the type of privilege I rely upon most in my practice and in giving advice to clients, particularly when they are engaged in sensitive tax planning or when they are involved in an audit by the Canada Revenue Agency or other taxing authorities. Identifying opportunities to create, claim, and protect privilege provide useful tools for protecting sensitive records from disclosure. Key features of solicitor-client privilege is that the communication be between a client and his or her lawyer, that the communication is intended to be made in confidence, and that it involves the seeking or giving of legal advice. Clay, in your civil litigation practice, litigation privilege must come up all the time. What are the hallmarks of this type of privilege?
It certainly does, Lori. Litigation privilege often overlaps with solicitor-client privilege because very often a litigation privilege conversation will involve a lawyer. But there are some important differences between the two. Litigation privilege protects communications that have the dominant purpose of preparing for existing or anticipated litigation, strategizing about an impending lawsuit. But notably, there is no requirement for a lawyer's involvement. Litigation privilege can protect a call or email string amongst a CEO and CFO, for example, with no lawyer involved as long as the dominant purpose is to strategize about a litigious dispute. The major factor to consider here is the dominant purpose. It's not enough that preparing for litigation is one of many purposes for a document or conversation. For example, a document prepared to set out the findings of an investigation of an incident so that the safety policy can be changed, but that also happens to help the company prepare for a lawsuit, is not likely to be privileged. Preparation for litigation has to be the dominant purpose. Solicitor-client privilege is about who is involved in the communication. Does it include a lawyer acting in their capacity as a lawyer? On the other hand, litigation privilege is about what is being discussed. Is the conversation predominantly focused on strategizing about a litigious dispute? The two are also different in how long they survive. Unlike solicitor-client privilege, which lasts forever unless a rare exception applies, litigation privilege applies only for as long as the litigation is ongoing. It ends when the litigious dispute being discussed is over.
An often overused term is without prejudice. Is labeling records without prejudice all that is required to invoke settlement privilege?
Yes, that phrase is very often misused, and the answer is no. Marking something without prejudice does not automatically make it privileged. Settlement privilege protects communications that involve a legitimate effort to reach a compromise amongst parties to a dispute. The privilege enables parties to speak freely and openly without concerning themselves that the ultimate trier of fact will see their communications. Any communication, written or verbal, that involves a legitimate attempt to settle a dispute is privileged. It is the substance of the conversation that matters. Putting without prejudice doesn't make a letter privileged, and failing to put those words on a letter that is aimed at achieving a compromise doesn't impact on its privileged status. Lori, we haven't discussed common interest privilege yet. Does that type of privilege arise in your practice area?
It certainly does. There are different types of common interest privilege, but the one that comes up in the tax planning and disputes context is transactional or advisory common interest privilege. This type of privilege is often overlooked because the opportunity to establish it can arise at the early stages of planning a transaction, such as a merger or acquisition. It can be really useful to keep in mind. It can be established where two parties exchange privileged information with one another in pursuit of a common goal. The privilege can be maintained through a joint retainer, that is, where one lawyer, two parties, or a common interest agreement. We are seeing parties enter into written common interest agreements more often, including during intra-company transactions. It sounds obvious, but the parties must have a common interest or goal, but don't have to have all issues in common, as long as they are not completely adverse in interest.
That makes sense, Lori, but how does common interest apply if the different parties are in different jurisdictions?
It's a good point. You need to be aware that the courts in Canada have protected privilege more broadly than in other jurisdictions, including most American states. Care needs to be taken to consider the laws of privilege in the other jurisdiction, and in drafting a common interest privilege agreement, considering how the laws of the non-Canadian jurisdiction could apply.
Thanks very much for that, Lori. That is something that we should all keep in mind when we're dealing with matters involving other jurisdictions. And thank you for being here today.
It's been my pleasure. And I'd like to thank all of you for listening to this BLG podcast. For more information or to contact us directly, you can find us on social media or visit us online at blg.com.